Welcome to the Finding Grace in the Wilderness podcast. I'm your host, Sharon Hawkins. Here each week, we will share stories about how God's grace can be found during life's most difficult circumstances. Meet with me around the table as we chat with others who have found that God's faithfulness never ends. We will share truth and life and discuss faith, fears, struggles, and victories. Join us as we seek to grow deeper in relationship with Jesus, the one who makes a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Hello, friends, and welcome back to our podcast. Today, we continue with our very special guest, Allie Kent. Before we begin today, I wanted to invite you to go back and listen to the previous podcast, episode 45, for the first part of this interview with Allie. If you didn't hear part one, you'll miss some important information about the first part of her story. And I know you won't want to miss a single thing. Allie has an incredible testimony, and one of the most amazing parts of it is the joy that she has found through Jesus Christ as He's carried her and her family through the unimaginable. Allie, I'm so blessed to have you on my podcast. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk a little about your family.
You're married to Calton.
I am.
And you have two beautiful babies.
Yes, ma'am.
They're not babies, but they're Brody is eight, and Andy Kate is five.
Yes, ma'am.
I know that these two little ones are the apple of your eye, and you joke about how you're always talking about Brody and Andy. Being a mom's just the best thing ever. And now you have another baby on the way, and you're expecting in early August.
This baby is a God thing as well,
yeah.
And I know that God wants this sweet one here, mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited.
Allie, will you start with the next part of your story when you married Calton?
Calton and I got married in 2014. We had been together since I was in the 10th grade. He had been through all the things with me, side by side. I'm so incredibly grateful. And so, obviously, I knew he was the one. I didn't want anybody else by my side. And so we got married, and we moved almost instantly with his job. He was doing his rotations, and so we were having a ball because here I am. I'm finally healthy. Like, I feel good. We're ready to live. Like, this is so exciting. And we did. We had so much fun because we went to St. Louis and Savannah and Louisville and all of these incredible adventures with all of the people that God brought our way. And I have some amazing friends that we met along the way. Then we moved to Savannah. So while we were in Savannah, we got pregnant with Brady. Well, we got pregnant with Brady in Louisville, and then we moved to Savannah. But we had Brady there. It was just pure joy. But then we moved back home. It was almost 2 years, I believe, after we got married. We wanted to be around our families, mm-hmm. So that Brady would have family to grow up around. So we moved back here, and we were living with Mom and Dad while we were building our house. It was very unexpected. I had hurt my knee at one of our friends' weddings. My kneecap had popped out of place. It had happened a million times before. I've had so many surgeries on my knees because of gymnastics and dance and everything else that they were just kind of wrecked. But every time after the surgery, like, everything would get better and I would get back to normal. Well, once again, that feeling that God gives you of not to do something, like, he lays it on. And it was such a strong feeling that I remember talking to my Nana one day, and I just kept telling her, "Man, I just don't feel right about this surgery. Like, do you think that it's going to be okay? Do you think this is, why do you think that I'm having this?" And I remember her saying, "Allie, maybe you shouldn't do it. Like, if God is continuing to put this feeling on you, like, mm-hmm. don't do it." And I just kept thinking, there's no way that I can't do it. I mean, I have to get better. And in order to get better, I have to have the surgery so that they can repair that. So once again, I just pushed that feeling so far to the side. And I just kept telling Cal, I was like, "I'm going to go to the hospital. It's going to be fine." He had to be in the OR that day, was just having it at another hospital. And I said, "I don't need you at the hospital. It's okay. I'll just get Mom. She'll just bring me home and we're done. It's okay." It was not okay. I thank the Lord. We were at the hospital that April was at. April is our angel. She is one of the people that God has sent to us that is our chosen family. Do not know how in the world we would have gotten through half the things without the Gillespie fam. I just remember coming out of surgery. I could barely see the clock, but I remember finally getting a little bit of a clear vision to see the clock. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is hours after I was already supposed to be home. Why am I still in the hospital? And there was a nurse that ran over to me and she says, you're awake. I've got to go get the doctors. Well, the doctors come in. April comes with them. April's face is white as a ghost. I can see this look on her face that something didn't go right. And I see all of these doctors surrounding me apologizing.
Oh no.
And I kept thinking, why are they apologizing to me? Like, what do they have to apologize for? Once again, here I am in this situation where I can't lift my head. I couldn't lift my head up. I was getting so sick. I couldn't hardly move. I was just laying there watching these people apologizing to me. They were like, we're going to have to admit you to the hospital. We almost lost you in the operating room from a knee surgery. We almost lost you. Like, we have had to give you multiple things. You're going to be fine. We're just going to monitor everything overnight. I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, what, Cal's not here. Does he have any idea, like, what in the world is going on? Well, all of a sudden, Cal is busting in the door, and I just remember thinking, he's here. Like, we're okay. Like, he's here with me. Everything's going to be fine. He's going to encourage me. Like, I was waiting for that encouragement. We're going to get through this night. Everything will be fine. We'll just go back home. It'll be a good day tomorrow. Well, my blood pressure just kept bottoming out throughout the night. I've had multiple knee surgeries before, and you can kind of put a little bit, at least a little bit of pressure. Mm-hmm. Well, the leg was not working. It would not move. I knew that I thought it was very straight. I mean, obviously there's a ton of swelling and things that it's hard to move your leg, but there was just something I knew from the beginning, something mm-hmm. was wrong. We went home. The doctors were like, okay, everything's going to be fine. Now you'll just start physical therapy and you're good. Like, you almost died, but here you are. We're great. We're going to just move on. I just remember April being with us the entire time. And she was like, I don't know what in the world happened. She said, but we're just going to get you better. So I went home. I started physical therapy. I kept telling the physical therapist, it was about a month into it. And I kept saying, my leg won't move. Like, it's not wanting to bend and straighten. They kept looking at it and they kept telling me, well, it's probably just, you know, scar tissue. Let's just keep moving it. I'll move it myself and we're going to just see if it'll start working properly.
And that hurts when they move that, doesn't it?
And I was not expecting to be in that much pain even a month out. Obviously, knee surgeries are so painful. Mm-hmm. They are awful. You know, a month out, you at least are feeling a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I was not. Mine was getting worse, and I couldn't move my leg, and I went back to the doctor, and the doctor was like, this is not normal. Your leg should be moving a whole lot more than this, and he said, you probably just didn't move it enough, and there's just a ton of scar tissue in there. So I was like, oh, yeah. Like, well, let's just go in and remove the scar tissue so I can start. Absolutely. Took me back to the OR. We removed the scar tissue. He tightened everything up so that, you know, where they put the cadaver in, he said, this thing should be in tip-top shape. We're good. Well, I came back out of the OR, and over the next few months, it just would not move. It was still just stiff as a board, but it was stuck in a position. It was not completely straight. My leg was slightly bent, and it would not bend, and it wouldn't straighten from that position. So it was slightly bent. So it's not like I could walk normal, even just with a straight leg. It was just, it was horrific pain. Every time that I was trying to put pressure on it, because of my knee being the way that it was, I mean, my knee would turn black. It was black all the time. It would make my entire leg just be purple and swollen. You could not put any pressure on it. I was on crutches for almost a year and a half. And they just kept telling me, we don't know. There's nothing else that we can do. Like, this is it. And it was stuck in that position. That was the most disheartening feeling, thinking that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with my leg like this, because there's nothing else a doctor can do. I prayed and prayed and prayed. I was like, God, please just get my leg moving so that I can get back to living life and like being the mom that I can be, because Brady was little. And I remember looking at all of my friends and they were going to the park and carrying their baby here or there, picking them up and holding them. And I couldn't do that with him. I couldn't pick him up. I couldn't walk with him. I sure couldn't take him to the park because I couldn't even walk myself. I just remember thinking, once again, I am in this valley of just being completely alone. There's nobody else that can help me right now. It's only God. And I'm thinking, God, you've already done so much for me. Is this like as good as it gets? I just remember thinking, life is going to be over. Like, I can't even walk with my child. And I remember the physical therapist asking what my goal was. And I said, my goal is literally just to carry my little boy and walk across the room and to be able to sit Indian style on the floor. And I said, I just want to be able to sit with my legs crossed and then be able to straighten them out so that I can stand up. And I said, that's my goal. And I said, being able to carry Brody just seems like a dream right now. I said, I see all of my friends getting to like hold their babies and walk with them. I said, that's all that I want. And they said, okay, well, we're just gonna keep pushing. We're gonna see what we can do if we can get you to that goal. And it was just months and months and months. I was their longest patient. they said that they had never had a patient as long. And I said, oh, of course, here I am. They became really like my second family. I said, this was my second home, physical therapy. And I said, I'm ready to graduate from you. We're ready to move on.
I love y'all, but you know.
Yeah, I love y'all so much. But I said, I gotta go. Like, I can't be living my days here. Like, I can't even, we gotta walk, and I'm ready to walk out that door. Finally, God gave me Dr. Bowman. Dr. Larry Bowman, anybody that knows him, they know what an incredible doctor he is. And I walk into his office, and he looked at me, and he said, He said, we are fixing your leg. He said, I'm going to do everything in my power to get you walking again. He said, you are way too young for this to be as good as it gets. And I just kind of sat there, and I was like, is he saying what I think that he's saying? Like, am I going to be able to walk? This is the best news that I've got in a year. Like, this is going to happen. And so I just was filled with so much hope because I thought, God has sent me the right surgeon, and he's going to get in here and work as hard as he can to get me moving. There was one week, every time I walked into his office, he was like, all right, Ellie, you ready to go back? Let's go to the OR. And I went back to the OR 5 times that week. He was like, we are getting it moving. He said, if you are willing to do this, he said, I'm willing to do this. And he said, I'm going to do everything that I can. So 5 times in 1 week, I went to the OR. After that, he said, okay, it's moving enough to where I think that we can let it heal now. You just continue doing all of the things. He said, you try to get in swimming pools, go biking, do workouts, walk upstairs, because I couldn't even walk up our stairs and it would swell like a balloon. I mean, even if I walked from like the kitchen to the bathroom, it was swelling so much that I would have to just lay the rest of the day. Obviously, I was on the crutches. So finally, I was at peace and I said, okay. I said, it's time to just go home and heal now. And he said, I promise. He said, you just continue pushing through. And he said, your leg's going to get to working. So then I left my buddies there because they became like my family too. And I said, all right. I said, well, then we don't have to do this every week. We don't have to go back to the OR every week. Let's give it a rest. Over the course of probably 6.5, 7 months, I got the full mobility back in my leg. I was able to do all the things that I wanted to do and so much more. Once again, God had filled me with this joy that I really didn't even think he could give me more joy than after what he had given me with my brain injury. During the time of my leg not working and being on crutches and not being able to move, because even sleeping, I was in so much pain. I was just screaming out because it hurt so bad to just even have my legs straight and like laying like that. And I just remember sitting in the shower constantly, day after day. I would just sit there and I would pray and I would listen to Lauren Daigle. I remember listening to this song by her, and it was like talking about, you know, if he doesn't move the mountains. And I thought, okay, God, if you choose not to heal me, please just give me peace about this. Please just give me a joy that I'm able to just get through life and like enjoy this life mm-hmm. and live it with, you know, my family and be able to be the best mom and wife that I can be. Just give me that. If you choose not to, it's okay. And I said, how hard it is to say, it's okay if I never am able to walk again. But please just give me the peace that I need to walk through this. Mm-hmm. And I knew what mom did with praying, and I did not give up. And even whenever I did not feel like anything was happening, because I was like, God, this isn't going to happen for me, is it? It's not going to happen. And I was like, I'm just going to keep on praying. I'm going to keep on and on and on. I didn't give up with that. I did not give up praying. That was a time in my life where I was like, even when it was so hard, I didn't stop, because I was like, I know what happened when my mom didn't stop and how much pain she was going through. And I know the power of prayer through that. So this is my time to just talk to you and be, for you to just help me to have the peace to get through this so that I can be there for Brady and for Calton. He decided to heal me. And the fact that he decided to give me a second chance with walking, now I can do things that I didn't even do before, because I'm like, I don't want to sit down. I want to be able to, with me and Cal, go on all these trips, and we are able to walk up these mountains and run up these mountains. And the fact that I can run up these mountains that are so huge, and I'm just going as fast as I can, and my legs able to not give out on me, and it's able to get through it. I mean, there's just so much joy in that. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, obviously standing right now, I don't want to sit down. And everybody's like, why do you have so much energy? I'm making up for lost time. There's times where I've laid in bed for years, and then I had to sit in that chair for years with my leg. I said, I have a lot of living to catch up on. Like, yes, I have a lot of stuff. And I said, but God gave me that second chance, second, third, fourth, so that I'm able to do this. And I said, I don't want to shut up about him. Like, I want everybody to know what he's done for me. I don't deserve it. I do not deserve it. I do not deserve all of these things that he's done. And I'm just blown away that he's done them. And it's so overwhelming, because why he chose to heal me in those, I will never know. But man, I will spend the rest of my life praising him for it and thanking him. And he knows that I'll never be able to thank him enough, because it's never going to be enough for what he's done. And the ability to walk, the ability to talk, the ability to think for yourself, the ability to stand up and not have to pass out or not have your eyes roll back. Oh my word. I am so grateful.
And to be able to live knowing your brother is waiting for you.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's hard.
It is.
It's hard to be here.
I remember having people ask me, well, are you over it yet? Are you over? And I mean, but this was even right after he had passed away and I had started into high school, and they're like, you're not over that yet? And I remember thinking, what? I mean, this is going on 20 years later, and no, I'm not over it. You don't get over it. God gives you ways to be able to handle it and be able to survive and like get through it, but you will never get over that happening. Like, that's not something I'll ever get over. And I know that I have him waiting front and center when I get there. I said, I can't wait. I said, whenever I think about, even through my next thing that happened, like, I remember just thinking, I cannot wait until I get to run straight into Jesus's arms and just squeeze him. I said, because that's my person. I said, Jesus has been right there every step of the way when I felt so alone and that I couldn't put one foot in front of the other, and he's right there with me. Mm-hmm. And God, I love him so much. I said, I really can never express how much I love him. And I said, oh my goodness. I said, he knows. He made me. Like, God made me. So they know that I'm a little extra and a little over the top. So they know I'm coming running. And as soon as that happens, and I said, and I know who's going to be right there. And I said, Josh is going to be waiting right there. And I said, what he's experiencing right now, oh my goodness, I can't wait to hear all about it. And I said, because there is going to be nothing like that up there. And I said, we won't have to go through all this pain and suffering and this just constantly going through nightmare after nightmare. And that's done. Like, we will finally be with them and be in Jesus' arms, and we're going to be right there. Like, we're going to be home. And that's our home. I used to be petrified of all of that. I don't, you know, as a kid, you're thinking, oh my goodness, no. Like, now having gone through all of these things and having that relationship, I'm like, oh my word, I can't wait. I'm so excited. Like, this is going to be the best thing in the whole world. And we're all going to be together and happy and healthy and getting to serve Him forever for the rest of our lives, and Him being right there with us to do that. Just seems, oh man, He knows how much that is going to be. What a day. What a
Amen.
Day.
Amen. Preach it.
And I just, I mean, it gives me cold chills. I can't imagine what we will all experience the moment that we step foot there. And I have seen it with my Nana and everyone. You just see the peace that they have as they're passing away. And because I was always like, do you think God gives you this? Do you think God? And now I know without a shadow of a doubt, He most definitely does. Because it all comes from Him. So there's this peace and joy and all the things mixed in with it. He's bringing you home.
Absolutely.
What greater joy than that?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I'm so grateful. And during my knee stuff, I had experienced several things with, I was having these issues with my heart and I thought that, you know, maybe it was from the surgery, that they couldn't get my heart rate under control. It would shoot up and it would not come down. I went to the heart doctor. They could see that there was something wrong, and they said it could possibly be from whatever happened in the OR. It has messed up your heart rhythm. Things that are completely out of my control. And I thought, okay, then what can I do to make this better? Well, they just kept giving me certain kind of medicines, putting this. Well, then none of that was helping. Absolutely none of it was helping. And I was having these severe panic attacks because of not being able to move my leg. And all. So it was just spiraling out of control. I know that I was probably total nutcakes during that time because it was just so much. It was just very overwhelming. I was also having random heart issues that nobody could figure out. I kept going to the doctor. I would break out in these like hives, and they were like, but it's not hives. They said, it's not from stress. They said, we know how much stress has gone on in y'all's lives. They said, but it's not that. They said, this is, your body is fighting against you. We cannot find out what in the world's going on with you. All of these things kept happening. The heart was a biggie because I was like, oh my goodness, I can't get my heart down. And it was even when I was getting excited, if I would get excited, heart rate would jack up and it would not come down. If I talked loud, and I'm, you know, a loud talker, and if I talked even the slightest bit loud, my heart rate would jack up and it wouldn't come back down. The doctors kept telling me, we see that there's some kind of arrhythmia. We don't know what it is. We know that we can give you this medicine or this medicine that can hopefully help in the moment. But they said, we have no idea what happened in the OR. There were not a lot of notes of what happened in the OR, so they didn't have anything to go by. They were at a loss. They just said, we don't know. We're going to give you this. There was something going on. I was getting out of bed and I was slurring my words. I mean, even having conversations with people, I knew, I was like, they're going to think that I'm drunk all the time. I mean, because I could not carry on a conversation without slurring my words. And I was getting very dizzy to where I was constantly having to lay down because I thought I was going to pass out. I couldn't walk in a straight line.
And this was happening while your knee was going on.
While the
knee
stuff was going on. And so there were a ton of unanswered questions that I just kept going to the doctor for. I mean, I hate to say it, there were so many CT scans because they thought, oh, maybe she has blood clots in her lungs. Maybe she has this, because I couldn't catch a deep breath, but it was because of the heart stuff. I was like, I've got to figure out what's wrong with me. So here I am. I was thinking, okay, well, I've got to research all of these things because nobody can figure out what's going on. But for whatever reason, the doctors would always be like, well, your body is fighting against you, but we don't know why. We have no idea if there's like an infection. So they would put me on steroids. I was on steroids constantly. Then it would come back. I mean, it was just a whole process. And there was one day that I had a ton of pressure in my breast. And I thought, well, that's nothing. It's probably just cysts, because, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, everybody gets cysts. So I went to the doctor and he just said, lay off the caffeine, lay off the chocolate, like don't eat a lot of stuff like that. That can cause them to be worse. And I thought, okay, I'll just go home and try, you know, to not eat or drink any of that. And maybe my body will calm down. And it just continuously got worse. The knot got bigger and harder. And there was just pressure. That's the only thing I could say. I felt pressure constantly. Mm-hmm. I went back to the doctor and he said, okay, for your peace of mind, we will give you the ultrasound, but there's nothing that's going to be wrong because you're way too young to have anything wrong. And I go and I have the ultrasound. During the ultrasound, the lady just looked at me and she said, let me just have just a minute. I need to go grab a doctor. The doctor came in and he said, with what we found, he said, if you were my daughter, I would go and have a biopsy tomorrow. He said, I would not wait for this. He said, this is very serious and we need to get this taken care of.
Now, this was after the knee.
It was during that I had all of the stuff going on with my heart. It was just so many health problems at once.
They overlapped. Knee got better,
but the heart stuff did not. The heart stuff, all of that kept getting worse, and I just kept thinking it was from the anesthesia because mm-hmm. the doctor said it could possibly be from the anesthesia. And what had happened in the OR that they didn't know about, they said, obviously, if they almost lost you on the operating table, there's a whole lot of things that affects within your body that people don't realize. And so I was just thinking, oh, well, we just got to keep giving it time, And so that's when I found the knot, have the ultrasound. The doctor comes in and tells me that I need to have the biopsy right away and that if it were his daughter, he would not wait. Mm-hmm. And so I go in and have the biopsy. That's when the nurse called me back and said, she had good news and bad news. The good news was that I did not have cancer yet. The bad news was that it was a certain type of mass that needed to come out right away. So they scheduled me for my first lumpectomy. I had no idea what to expect with that. My family, nobody's ever had, you know, issues with their breasts or anything. So I didn't know I really didn't know what to expect. So I go in and have that. And I remember my doctor coming to me and saying, Allie, this is a whole lot more serious than we thought. And he said, you are going to be a high-risk breast cancer patient for the rest of your life. And we're going to have to monitor you very, very closely. You're constantly going to have to come in and have breast MRIs. He said, we're probably going to have lots of biopsies. He said, this is going to be the new norm. Mm-hmm. And that floored me. That absolutely floored me because I thought, how in the world is this happening? Like, I've got a little boy and now I'm this high-risk breast cancer patient and I have this mass that wants to continue growing and it's causing all of these issues within my entire body. I had to have, after that, multiple lumpectomies. Every time it was coming back worse than before. I just kept thinking, this is going to be what takes me from Kelton and Brody. I had met with the oncologist, and she had given me so much hope. She was like, this is probably a fluke thing. She said, we're just going to be extra cautious. You know, I asked her if I could get pregnant. I said, we would love to have another baby. Like, is it okay for me to get pregnant again? That was going to be with Andy. And she said, absolutely. She said, there's nothing that's going to harm you in any way to get pregnant. Because I knew, I was like, okay, all of the stuff that's it's all hormones. So getting pregnant sure is not going to be beneficial to what's going on. But she said it was fine. So I went home and I was like, okay, we have peace about, you know, having another baby. So she said it's fine. They're just going to monitor me throughout the entire thing. And we're just going to keep an eye on it. And up to that point, I had multiple lumpectomies. Everything had been, you know, kind of stable. Well, every time I would have the lumpectomy, it was the most bizarre thing because all of my symptoms with my heart and my legs and all the craziness, the slurring of my words, everything would resolve. Well, I didn't know why in the world that was resolving. And I would tell everybody and they were like, there's no way. That's not possible. And I kept telling Cal to just be like, okay, Cal, like, I don't have this. Like, my heart rate is stable right now, which it never is anymore. My heart rate has gone back down. I'm not slurring my words. I can think clearly. I can get up out of bed. Well, as soon as that mass would start growing back, the symptoms would come back. And so they had not been there for about a month, and we decided we were going to start trying for another baby. We got pregnant, and we were so excited. And because we were like, through all of this, like, God's given us this beautiful baby, we could not wait to start that new adventure. And Brady was getting a sibling. He was over the moon. It was 3 weeks after I had conceived that I started noticing problems with my vision. And I thought, oh, you know, pregnancy, it messes with your eyes. It's just part of it. Well, I would just start walking and I would get, you know, a little warm because it's warm outside. I would lose my vision in my left eye. And I kept thinking, what in the world? This pregnancy is wild. Like, I didn't know you could lose your vision with, you know, being pregnant. I called the eye doctor, and the eye doctor was like, we need to see you right away. I drove out there, and they did all of these tests, and she came back in, and she said, we've already called your neurologist. We've already got everything lined up for an MRI. We are so sorry. We think that you have a brain tumor. I just sat there, and here I am pregnant, not wanting to get overly upset because you're like, okay, I'm trying to keep my baby, you know, safe in there. I can't have all of these crazy emotions. And I'm thinking, but yet they're sitting here telling me that they think that I have a brain tumor. I remember walking out of there, my doctor, she is incredible. She's my general doctor. And she called me personally and was like, Allie, what in the world is going on? She said, why is this happening? Why are they calling all of us and telling us that you have a brain tumor? Why are they? She said, get to the hospital right now. She said, we're going to go ahead and order this thing. We're getting this done so that we know what's going on. She's a prayer warrior, and she was just praying with me. She was so encouraging. She was so hopeful. She said, we're going to get through this. She said, no matter what it is, she said, we're all right here behind you, and it's going to be okay. And she said, you know what God's already brought you through. She said, this is going to be just another thing to write in your book. Because she always tells me she wants me to write a book. And so she said, this is another one of those things. So you just hold on. She said, it's going to be okay. And I'm just sitting here thinking, here I am going in for an MRI. I'm pregnant. All of this stuff is happening. And I'm trying to stay calm through it all. I'm telling my parents and Calton. Was not fun because I'm sitting here. Cal was at work. I called Dad to come and get me, and I just told him. I said, "You're gonna have to take me to the hospital. We gotta go to the hospital. We gotta have this done." Cal was in a case, and I just told him, "You please just call me afterwards. This is insane, but I'm going to the hospital." And everybody's just in shock. Everybody's sitting there looking like, "What do we do?" And nobody knew what in the world to do other than. We just gotta start praying for this right now. And I go in for the MRI, no brain tumor. Praise God, no brain tumor. Because I was petrified. I knew that I didn't have the vision in my left eye. I knew I had so much pressure on my brain. And once that pressure started coming on, the slurring of the words, everything was back. My hands wouldn't work the way that I wanted them to. I was having very similar symptoms, the doctor said, to someone with a brain tumor. They could not figure out why. There was a ton of pressure on my brain. And they said if I was not pregnant, they would have admitted me and they would have started IV steroids, all the things to try to get the pressure off of my brain. But they couldn't do that because that can harm the baby. And I was like, no way. I do not want anybody getting close to her baby. I don't want anybody hurting her. We got to protect her. We are just going to wait for this until after I deliver, and then you can do whatever you want with me. Well, I delivered Andy. I had all these issues throughout the entire pregnancy, the slurring of the words, the not being able to move properly. I was falling all the time, all the pressure on my brain. We kept going to doctors. The one doctor, he was a neuro-ophthalmologist. He was very blunt and open with me, and as soon as I walked in the door, he said, "Are you sure you don't have a brain tumor?" And I said, "No, sir." I said that we've already done the MRI. He said, "With what you have," he said, "I'm looking at all of the things in your eyes right now." And he said, "Your body's telling you you have a brain tumor." And he said, "You don't think, you know, anything else? Like, is there not?" And he said, No, he said, this is spot on with a brain tumor. He said, I have no idea how you don't have a brain tumor. He said, but I'm just going to be honest. He said, there has to be one somewhere in your brain. He said, this is not possible for you to have these symptoms and have the swelling that you have without a brain tumor. I thought, man, did they miss something on the MRI? Are we missing something? And I got him to read it. And he said, no, there's no brain tumor. He said, I don't know. He said, but as soon as you deliver your baby, he said, we are going to hit the ground running with getting better. So I delivered Andy. During her delivery, everything was amazing. Afterwards, I couldn't speak. It was horrible. They were trying to ask me questions, and I could not communicate with them. My brain and my mouth, it would not let me speak to them at all. And if I would speak to them, I was trying to just make it into yes or no answers. And I was slurring my words. It was almost as if I had a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I was having very similar stroke-like symptoms and could not speak to them. I remember thinking, I just need to get home. I just need to get home and rest, and maybe all of this will go away. And I got home, and I had gotten mastitis. Well, the mastitis had turned into something way more, and they had put me into the hospital. They thought basically my body was going into sepsis. So here I am with my newborn baby and going through, and I thought, oh my goodness, surely they're going to get to the bottom of this, and we are going to figure out what is going on with me, because now I have a little boy and a newborn baby, and I've got to get home to them. I've got to take care of them. I can't be the one in the hospital being sick. I've got to get home to them. When we left the hospital, the doctors just kept telling me, we have no idea what in the world. Your body is just wanting to attack itself, and we don't know what's going on. You just keep an eye on this, this, and this, and hopefully it's just a part of, you know, being a new mom and the mastitis. He said, your body's going to get better. He said, but we've just got to give it time. I go home. I was okay for a little bit. Then I was having pressure in my breast, and I just kept ignoring it. Let it out of sight, out of mind. If you don't touch it, it's not there. That's what I kept thinking. Because I kept thinking, it's just scar tissue. It's just the scar tissue from the lumpectomy. There's nothing that's grown there. You know.
I do. I've been there.
And yeah, absolutely. And you just, anytime you feel that, you're like, it's scar tissue. And so I just put that out of my mind. Well, there was one day that I had taken Brody to my mom and dad's, and I needed them to just hang with him for a little bit, and I was going to go home and clean the house real quick because I'd been in the hospital, all the things, and I just wanted to get the house cleaned up so we could have everything kind of in order a little bit, and maybe things were going to get better. And so then I had gotten a phone call from my dad, and my dad was hysterical. It was by the time I had gotten home. He was hysterical, and he said, we've been in an accident, and he said, Brady is okay. He said, but your mom is not. He said, so please, you and Calton, hurry as fast as you can and get on top of Glassy, and please tell Cal exactly where we are. He said, we need him. Once again, that feeling with your legs that you can't move, you can't operate. I had no idea what in the world to do, and I could barely make it to the car. I finally got to the car. Here's our newborn baby in the back, and then me and Cal in the front. And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, mom is going to be, she's going to be gone. And what happened to her? Because dad wouldn't give me any details. He just said, we needed y'all. We started going up Glassy. Ambulances are everywhere. Once again, just like Josh's accident, fire trucks, police. I could not see mom. They had tried to block her. Cal got out of the car. He said, I want you to stay in here. He said, I have no idea what we're going up to. He said, just stay right here. I'm going to go take care of mom. He jumped out of the car and went up to the front. I could see my mom's legs. They had her face and everything covered. And I saw mom's legs, and they were not moving whatsoever. And I just remember praying and praying and praying, God, please let me just see her legs move. Please let me just see her legs move. And there was no movement whatsoever. Calton brought Brody over to me just to show me, he is alert. He's okay. He was in a neck brace. He was so banged up, had scrapes, cuts everywhere, all over his face. He was very out of it. It was almost as if he were in shock. He was not moving, but he was just looking straight. His leg was in rough shape. Cal said, your mom is going to have to go in one ambulance and Brody's going in another. They are going to put your mom on life support. And he said, I've got to be at the hospital with both of them. He said, so I'm going to go with them. He said, you take Andy and go to your dad's and take him home. Because it was during COVID. You couldn't go in the hospital. You couldn't, which was nuts. It was absolutely insane. I mean, here my mom is going to ICU and she has nobody going with her. That was a whole issue in itself. So dad got in the car and he just kept saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to do if I lose her? He said, that's my best friend. That's my best friend. What am I going to do? He's just rocking back and forth. Hey, you can just tell he's in shock. He doesn't know. He said, Allie, I saw it. He said, I saw it. I saw it run over her head. And he said, and then throw Brody. And he said, what am I going to do? It was awful getting dad to like not have that in his mind and to get the visions that he was having nightmares all throughout. I mean, mom was in the hospital. They had already told us that by the time that she got to the hospital, it was just reliving me and Josh's accident, our accidents again.
And it was on May 4th.
And it was on May 4th, which was, we were already celebrating my miracle day because she, I mean, we just always celebrate that because that's the day that God gave us our miracle. He gave us a second chance. And it was on the day of my accident many years later, same day as we had just been celebrating my miracle day. Here my mom is fighting for her life. And they had put her on life support. Basically, she had so much. The subdural hematomas. She had multiple. She had things up and down her spine. Like, all so many brain bleeds. I mean, it was just, it was insane, the amount of damage that she had. And they had basically said there was like a 0.1% chance of survival throughout the night. They put her on life support. Dad almost got arrested trying to get into the hospital because, you know, they would not let you in. And he said, I do not care about COVID. I don't care about COVID. I don't care about being, he said, I've just got to see her. He said, if this is the last time that I get to see her, I'm going to see her. And it was a nightmare trying to get him back there. And they finally made him go home. He just paced the whole night because we were waiting for answers because obviously that you had to wait on a doctor to call you during that time period because there's no visitors. And Cal was keeping up with everything and he was right there with Brody. So he was the angel because mom said when she woke up and saw Cal, she said it was like looking at a literal angel because she was like, you have no idea how much I needed to see
somebody
I love. Like,
and he works there.
And
so
he works there. And so that's why he was in there. And he was watching out for her once again.
Good old Cal.
Cal, I'm telling you.
You're going to have to go home and kiss that man on the mat.
He is literally the best. And so he took care of everybody during that time. And mom, I'm telling you, by the grace of God, she made it through that. How in the world she made it through that? It's God.
Prayer.
There's just no other.
That prayer thing.
It's prayer. Mm-hmm. And I said, once again, our people surrounding us, carrying us. I said, God literally gives you people that help carry you through these things. Mm-hmm. And I said, we know who ours are. And they have carried us every single time. And we couldn't have done it. Like, we could not have done it without those people that God has chosen for us to help us through these things. And I said, because Joey Gillespie, he's who comes to mind when I think about dad. Dad was like, I don't want anybody here. I don't want anybody here. I can't talk. I can't think. I can't. He said, I don't know what to do right now. And Joey said, I know that you don't want me there. I know you don't want food, but I'm just going to sit in the living room until you need somebody. And he said, I'm not going anywhere. And I said, that is a brother. That right there is a brother. And I said, that is family. And those people are our family. Because they did not leave. They sat right there with us. Even when dad was like, I can't have anybody. I saw dad laugh and smile for the first time being with Joey the entire time through all of that. That God gives you that. That is a gift straight from him because Dad didn't feel any joy or, you know, no peace. There was no peace whatsoever. And him having his brother there and them laughing, and it just made him be like, okay, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And it was like God sitting there, like, holding him during that time. And he gives you that. And how many times we have had that, and, like, how we've been carried by all of these incredible people that have become our family. And, I mean, that's people being Jesus' hands and feet. And, like, I mean, you know, like, he gives you every single bit of that. And I just can't brag on that enough. And how he works in all of those ways. And how he gives you peace that is beyond all understanding. When Mom started to finally heal, that's when I went home, was still having the pressure in my breast. I decided to finally check it. It was another mass. It was hard as a rock. And I went to the doctor the next day, and he sat me down, and he said, Allie, this is not good. He said, I just want to go ahead and tell you and warn you before we even have another lumpectomy, this isn't good. And I went and I had another surgery. He sat me down, and he said, if you don't have a double mastectomy, he said, you'll die in your 30s. And he said, it's so bad. He said, and it has changed so drastically just in a month's time. He said, you're going to be the case of, you're not just going to get breast cancer and it be something that we can get right away. He said, yours is going to be aggressive. And he said, it will spread. He said, and you're already having symptoms all over your body, brain swelling, all of the things. And he said, we got to get those things off. Well, God had already given me peace 2 years prior, when we first started it, about having one. And it was just that peace beyond all understanding that does not make sense at all was just covered. It was just covering me. And I said, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get it done. Go ahead and get them off of me. Well, then my mind was going to, okay, I know that they're going to want to do reconstruction. Well, I don't want anything in my body to be fighting me anymore. My body has fought against me for so long. I'm ready to just be healthy. I don't want anything fighting against me. I want to be healthy. Well, we had went to all these different doctors, getting different options and all the things. And finally, I looked at Cal and I said, none of these are what I want. I said, everyone seems to have issues with down the road, this could happen. Down the road, this could happen. I said, the only one that doesn't is just having them completely nothing put in, just completely taken off. That's going to be how I'm going to be healthy. And I said, God has given me this peace that's made me like giddy about not having breasts. I said, because I know he's going to heal me through this. This is something that, I mean, I want to share with the entire world, because literally, oh my goodness, the peace he gave me with that and the giddiness of having a double mastectomy, knowing what he's going to do through this, was the wildest thing I had ever experienced in my life, because it was like he was talking directly to me, like, if you listen to me and don't do this and you just get them taken off, I promise I'm going to heal you. And it's like I could hear him so clearly tell me, you're going to be okay if you get these taken off. You just have to trust me. And that was one time in my life that I just remember saying, I trust you. I trust you fully and completely. This is no asking this question or second guessing this or that. It was complete peace of, I trust you. I completely believe you that you're going to heal my body. And seeing people's reactions in my families, everybody's like, are you sure? Like, this is nuts. And I just kept trying to convince them. I was like, y'all just sit back, because God's about to show y'all what he's about to do with taking these off. I said, he's going to heal me. Well, everybody, you know, they're sitting there thinking, okay, she has lost her marbles. Like, I don't know about this. Well, after I had the double mastectomy and got everything taken out, it was only a matter of weeks. My brain swelling went down. The pressure on my brain, my heart went back to a normal rhythm. It was not jacked up all the time. All of the issues I was having with slurring my words, all of the issues I was having with my movements and not being able to get out of bed, every issue that I had been having, all of the blood work that was nuts, I was having blood work done constantly and everything was off. Everything had resolved. The optical neuritis in my eye. The optical neuritis in my eye went into remission, and I didn't. I mean, things that doctors are telling me now going to appointments, they're like, that just does not happen. They said, I just have to tell you, like, God has performed this miracle. They said, because I don't think you realize, we see this all the time, and He has performed a miracle in you that I can't even tell you, like, what we see compared to what you're experiencing. They said, you better not be quiet about this. They said, this is something that you need to share with the world. They said, because this is not a normal thing. This is not what most people get to experience. And they said, for whatever reason, they said, He wanted to heal you. And I just cried and cried at my doctor's appointment a few weeks ago, just hearing them, because once again, they're just confirming what I already knew. And that was that He was in complete control and He healed me. And He gave us a miracle after miracle. And knowing, like, I've seen what He's done. I've seen through my body and my health and all of the things, I know what He's done. But hearing doctors be able to, them confirming, we can't take credit. Nobody can take credit for this. This is fully God healing you, is the greatest thing in the whole world. Mm-hmm. Because now I just look up and I'm like, do you hear this? The other day when I left that appointment, I just kept looking up and talking to God, and I just kept bragging. I said, look at you. I said, you get all this credit for all of these incredible things. I said, this is what you were doing the entire time through all of this. I said, do you know, I mean, how awesome this is to, I said, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve any of this. And yet, people get to see what you've done through my body, through my life. And I said, I am so unworthy of this. And this is just the greatest thing in the entire world that we get to brag on you all the time. And I said, God, please just let that be what my life means, is that people see you in every aspect of my life and all of the things that I've experienced and gone through. I said, I know that I didn't go through them in vain. I said, you have used this and made it into this purpose of, like, I'm the only one who could have done this, and I'm going to show the world. And I said, I want to share it with every person. I said, I know I get carried away with people even sitting in the doctor's office. And Cal said, oh my goodness, how did you just start talking to that person in the bathroom? I said, I love it. I get so excited. And then when they start talking to me, and then I start telling them all the things, we just get excited different, because it's just something to never be quiet about. And right. I said, with my loud voice and my extra self and ADHD self, I want to tell everybody. And I said, this is just something that he knows. Only God knows how truly grateful I am for everything that He's done in our life. Mm-hmm. Until the day that I'm unable to, I will shout it from the rooftops, and I'm just going to praise Him through it. And I said, there's no other way that I can truly say thank you other than bragging on Him and telling everybody what an incredible God we have. I just couldn't be any more grateful. Here I am, able to be with my babies and live life with them. I said, I love living life with them and living life with Cal and actually getting to be the wife and mom that I've always wanted to be. I never thought I would get to this point. I never thought I'd get to the point where I would be able to just fully be who I would, like, you know, long
was created to be.
Absolutely. And the fact that God is He's letting me live this life the way, you know, with being able to walk and talk and not being sick. I'm telling you, health is the biggest blessing in the whole world. That's why I always say that, because that allows you to do all the things that He wants you to do and, like, get out there and, like, see that. I mean, obviously, you see through all the things, He uses you laying in a bed. He uses, and yeah. I said, I could never thank Him enough. Yeah. I get so excited. Yeah. I could just really run around.
And He's done incredible miracles with your mother's recovery as well.
Incredible miracles with her. The fact that
she's alive.
I know, and there's no lasting effects of, like, her not being able to walk, mm-hmm. or her not being able to talk. I mean, the biggest gift in the whole world. We'll never stop thanking Him for that. I mean, absolutely. For all the things.
Absolutely. Well, if that didn't light your wood, then it's wet. I know I've said that wrong. I'm telling you, this woman has been through so much, and Jesus just shines through her.
Thank you for saying that.
And as if your beautiful story and all these incredible things that God has done in your life were not enough, as God so often does, He's writing a beautiful continuing footnote into your lives now with this precious new baby. You told me how, after you were pregnant with Andy, that you were terrified to get pregnant again, but that your hearts, all four of you, longed for a third baby. You prayed and you prayed that if it was God's will, that He would allow it to happen. And if not, you asked Him to just take that desire away. And after 2 long years of praying, you said the desire was still so strong and you had full peace about trying. And God gave you this precious little angel. And what a joy to see your babies seeing what God did, because their response was pure joy, saying, "Thank you, Jesus. God is so good. He's so, so good."
I'm so grateful. He knows that I'll never be able to thank Him enough.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing with me.
Thank you for having me. I was so excited to get to do this.
I'm so glad that you
did. I hope everybody kept up with my ADHD.
No, it was wonderful. Thank you for sharing your beautiful heart. Jesus just oozes out of it. And as I said, it's contagious. If you're listening and you're facing some impossible situations, you have to know that the God of the universe is there, and He's just a whisper away. All you have to do is look to Him. If you don't know Him and you face things like Allie has, I don't know that there's any way that any of us can get through without Him. But the help is there, and He loves us all so much. So if you don't know Jesus, I urge you today to make that choice to accept Him as your personal Savior. I would love to have the opportunity to talk with you. We'd love to pray for you. You can reach out to me at SharonHawkins.net under the contact tab, and we'll connect. When I first began this podcast, the Holy Spirit put it on my heart that this podcast was about proving His existence through real life experiences. And in every episode, we strive to do that. Through Allie Kent's interview, I believe that we've done that. God is real. And no matter what you face, no matter how impossible it might seem, He's always there waiting to carry you through. When we seek Him, we can always find God's grace in our wilderness.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. May God lead you safely through your wilderness as you trust Him, and may His river of grace always flood your desert times. He is doing a new thing. Let's not miss it. Subscribe or follow to make sure you don't miss a single episode. See you here next time.